Jaya Radha Madhava Huva Kunya Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari. Gopidana malabha kiri varada ho tve. Gopidana malabha kiri varada ho tve. Yasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tera Rabana Chahuti Yamuna Tera Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihakti Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihati Gopidana Pallava Giribhadra Huti Gopi jana balapa kiri badhari Yasoda Nandana Praja Jana Randahuna Yasoda Nandana Praja Jana Randahuna Jambuna Tira Vanachade Yamuna Tira Vanachade Jai Ho Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari Jai Ho Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravagacharya Osutera Satishi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chandanar Bhaktivinanda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Shudhuiras Thakur Gijay Prem Se Kahoshu Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasiri Gaur Bhaktivinda Gijay Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Shyam Kund Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Gijay Vrindavanam ki jai, Mathuradam ki jai, Jagannatha Swami ki jai, Yamunamai ki jai, Srimati Lalasi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premananda. So today is, of course, Janmashtami, the glorious appearance of Lord Sri Krishna. And we're going to speak a little bit about Krishna's appearance and the events that preceded Krishna's appearance. But first we're going to read from what I and some of the acharyas consider it to be the nutshell verse of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is 10.1.4. And I've quoted this verse many, many times. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nivritta Tarshar Upagi Omanad Vavoshadach Shotra Mano Abiramat Ka Uttama Shloka Gunanuvadat Puman Vidajeta Vina Pashugnat Nivritta Tarsharupa Gihamanat Vavoshadat Shotra Mano Biramat Uttama Shloka Gunanu Vadat Puman Vidajeta Bina Pashugnat Nivritta Tarsharupa Gihamanad Vavoshadat Shrotra Mano Biramat Gautama Shloka Gunanu Vadat Puman Vidajeta Bina Pashuknat Nivritta Tarsharupa Gihamanad Bhavoshadat Shrotra Mano Biramat Gautama Shloka Gunanu Vadat Puman Vidajeta Bina Pashugnat. Okay. Yasharupa Gihamanat Okay. Nivritta, released from. Tarshahai, lust or material activities. Upagiyamanat, which is described or sung. Bhava Oshadat, which is the right medicine for the material disease. Srotra, the process of oral reception. Manaha, the subject matter of thought for the mind. Abhiramat, from the pleasing vibrations, from such glorification. Kaha, who? Uttama shloka, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Guna anuvadat, from describing such activities. Puman, a person. Virajeta, can keep himself aloof. Vina, except. Pashuknat, either a butcher or one who is killing his own personal existence. So translation, glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performed in the Parampara system. That is, it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord except a butcher or one who is killing his own self? So you can repeat. Glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performed in the Parampara system. That is, it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord, except a butcher or one who is killing his own self? So, this purport is by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In India, it is the practice among the general populace to hear about Krishna, either from Bhagavad Gita or from Srimad Bhagavatam, in order to gain relief from the disease of repeated birth and death. Although India is now fallen, when there is a message about someone, that someone will speak about Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, thousands of people still gather to hear. This verse indicates, however, that such recitation of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam must be done by persons completely freed from material desires. Nivritta Tarshahai. Everyone within this material world, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, is full of material desires for sense enjoyment, and everyone is busy in sense gratification. But when thus engaged, one cannot fully understand the value of Krishna Katha, either in the form of Bhagavad Gita or in Srimad Bhagavatam. If we hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from liberated persons, this hearing will certainly free us from the bondage of material activities, but hearing Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by a professional reciter cannot actually help us achieve liberation. Krishna Katha is very simple. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As he himself explains, Matakparataram Nanyat Kitchid Anstad Dhananjaya. O Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. That's from the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, 7th text. Simply by understanding this fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can become a liberated person. But especially in this age, because people are interested in hearing Bhagavad Gita from unscrupulous persons who depart from the simple presentation of Bhagavad Gita and distort it for their personal satisfaction, they fail to derive the real benefit. There are big scholars, politicians, philosophers, and scientists who speak on Bhagavad Gita in their own polluted way, and people in general hear from them being uninterested in hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from a devotee. A devotee is one who has no other motive for reciting Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam than to serve the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore advised us to hear the glories of the Lord from a realized person, Bhagavata Parodhya, Bhagavata Stane. Unless one is personally a realized soul in the science of Krishna consciousness, a neophyte should not approach him to hear about the Lord, for this is strictly forbidden by Srila Sanatan Goswami, who quotes from the Padma Purana, a Vaishnava Makod Gyanam Puram Harikatam Ritam Shavanam Naiva Kartavyam Sharputishtam Yutha Payaha. One should avoid hearing from a person not situated in Vaishnava behavior. A Vaishnava is Nivritta Trishna. That is, he has no material purpose, for his only purpose is to preach Krishna consciousness. So-called scholars, philosophers, and politicians exploit the importance of Bhagavad Gita by distorting its meaning for their own purposes. Therefore, this verse warns that Krishna Katha should be recited by a person who is Nivritta Trishna. Shukadeva Goswami epitomizes the proper reciter for Srimad Bhagavatam and Parikshit Maharaj, who purposefully left his kingdom and family prior to meeting death, epitomizes the person fit to hear it. A qualified reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam gives the right medicine, bhavoshadhi, for the conditioned souls. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore trying to train qualified preachers to recite Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita throughout the entire world so that people in general in all parts of the world may take advantage of this movement and thus be relieved of the threefold miseries of material existence. The instructions of Bhagavad Gita and the descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam are so pleasing that almost anyone suffering from the threefold miseries of material existence will desire to hear the glories of the Lord from these books and thus benefit on the path of liberation. Two classes of men, however, will never be interested in hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam: those who are determined to commit suicide and those determined to kill cows and other animals for the satisfaction of their own tongues. Although such persons may make a show of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam at a Bhagavata Saptaha, this is but another creation of the karmis who cannot derive any benefit from such a performance. The word pashugnat is important in this connection. Pashugna means butcher. Persons fond of performing ritualistic ceremonies for elevation to the higher planetary systems must offer sacrifices, yagyas, by killing animals. Lord Buddhadev therefore rejected the authority of the Vedas because his mission was to stop animal sacrifices, which are recommended in Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. There's a quote from the Gita Govinda. Nindasi yagya videra shruti jatam sutaya vidaya tashita pashukatam keshavadrita buddha shavira jaya jagadishahati. Even though animal sacrifices are sanctioned in Vedic ceremonies, men who kill animals for such ceremonies are considered butchers. Butchers cannot be interested in Krishna consciousness, for they are already materially allured. Their only interest lies in developing comforts for the temporary body. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanantaya pratitachetasam vyavasayatmaka buddhi samado navatiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination of devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. That's, of course, from the Gita, second chapter, text 44. Srila Narottamadas Thakur says, Manusha janma paya Radha Krishna na bhajiya, janya shunya visha koinu. Anyone who is not Krishna conscious and who therefore does not engage in the service of the Lord is also pashugnat. Priya is willingly drinking poison. Such a person cannot be interested in Krishna Katha because he still has a desire for material sense gratification. He is not Nivritta Trishna. As it is said, Trivargikaste Purusha Vimukta Harimeda Saha. Those interested in Trivarga, that is in Dharma, Artha, and Kama, are religious for the sake of achieving a material position with which to gain better facilities for sense gratification. Such persons are killing themselves by willingly keeping themselves in the cycle of birth and death. They cannot be interested in Krishna consciousness. For Krishna Katha, topics about Krishna consciousness, there must be a speaker and a hearer, both of whom can be interested in Krishna consciousness if they are no longer interested in material topics. One can actually see how this attitude automatically develops in persons who are Krishna conscious. Although the devotees of the Krishna conscious movement are quite young men, they no longer read materialistic newspapers, magazines, and so on, for they are no longer interested in such topics. Nivritta Trishtarshahai. They completely give up the bodily understanding of life. For topics concerning Uttama Shloka, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the spiritual master speaks and the disciple hears with attention. Unless both of them are free from material desires, they cannot be interested in topics of Krishna consciousness. The spiritual master and disciple do not need to understand anything more than Krishna, because simply by understanding Krishna and talking about Krishna, one becomes a perfectly learned person. And then so, Yasmin Vigate Sarvam Evam Vigatam Bhavati. That means one who knows Krishna knows everything. Anyway, it's from the Mundaka Upanishad 1.3. The Lord sits within everyone's heart, and by the grace of the Lord, the devotee receives instructions directly from the Lord himself, who says in Bhagavad Gita 15.15, Sarvasya chaham hari sanavishto matak smritir gyanam apavanam cha vedai shasava arham eva vedyo vedanta krid vedavid eva chaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, and for me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Krishna consciousness is so exalted that one who is perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the spiritual master is fully satisfied by reading Krishna Katha as found in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar Vedic literatures. Since merely talking about Krishna is so pleasing, we can simply imagine how pleasing it is to render service to Krishna. When discourses on Krishna Katha take place between a liberated spiritual master and his disciple, others also sometimes take advantage of hearing these topics and also benefit. These topics are the medicine to stop the repetition of birth and death. The cycle of repeated birth and death, by which one takes on different bodies again and again, is called bhava or bhava rog. It means material emotions. If anyone willingly or unwillingly hears Krishna Katha, his bhava rog, the disease of birth and death, will certainly stop. Therefore, Krishna Katha is called bhavoshudha, the remedy to stop the repetition of birth and death. Karmis or persons attached to material sense enjoyment generally cannot give up their material desires, but Krishna Katha is such a potent medicine that if one is induced to hear Krishna Kirtan, he will certainly be freed from this disease. A practical example is Dhruva Maharaj, who at the end of his tapasya was fully satisfied. When the Lord wanted to give Dhruva a benediction, Dhruva refused it. Swaman Kritarto Smi Varam Nayache. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majalila, 22nd chapter, text 42. My dear Lord, he said, I am fully satisfied. I do not ask for any benediction for material sense gratification. We actually see that even young boys and girls in the Krishna consciousness movement have given up their long practice of bad habits like illicit sex. They've been practicing it. Illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, because Krishna consciousness is so potent that it gives them full satisfaction. They are no longer interested in material sense gratification. So nivritta tarsharupa gimana pavoshalo shotra mano biramat ka utapa shloka gurana vadat puman virajeta vina pashugnat. It's a very, very important verse. And I'm going to speak a little bit about the verse, and then I'm going to talk about the events preceding Krishna's advent. So Srila Prabhupada had us distribute Krishna book. Those of you who don't know what Krishna book, it's the summary study of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srila Prabhupada had us distributing this Krishna book publicly. And, you know, many of us really didn't understand. How are people going to understand or appreciate the pastimes of Krishna in the Krishna book? You know, there's a description of Krishna stealing butter, feeding it to the monkeys, description of Krishna dancing with so many girls in the middle of the night. There's a description of Krishna killing, you know, gigantic demons. And so how are people going to appreciate this? You know, we could understand how by distributing Bhagavad Gita, you know, would bring people to Krishna consciousness. But Krishna book. But the point is that in the beginning, people don't even understand Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of Krishna book. Because, as Prabhupada said, they have meatheads. Anyway, if someone is eating meat, killing cows, or killing any sort of animal like that, then their ability to understand spiritual topics is not there. But by giving them spiritual topics, eventually they'll stop their nefarious activities. So that was Prabhupada's strategy, and I personally experienced that. Of course, I wasn't doing too many nefarious activities, but I personally experienced that when after I had finished university, I was driving a taxi, and another taxi driver handed me the Krishna book. It was nice, you know, taxi kata. So he handed me the Krishna book, and I just started reading. You know, I just opened up in the middle, and I read about a little blue boy stealing butter and feeding it to monkeys. And after reading that, of course, I couldn't understand what the heck was going on here. Someone with blue skin. I've never seen anyone with blue skin except for someone who couldn't breathe anymore. You know, getting couldn't breathe, you know, dying, asphyxiation. And he was feeding the monkeys, and he was feeding so much to the monkeys that the monkeys couldn't eat anymore. And he said to his mother, what? That this milk is not, this yogurt and butter are no good, because even the monkeys won't eat it now. So, the volume is not loud enough for it?
No,
it's something else. Okay. So I read that, and I just said, what the heck's going on? But then I started to have dreams about a little blue boy feeding butter to the monkeys and getting chastised for it. And then all day long I was thinking of this, and what's going on with me? And Prabhupada would often talk about the book distribution in terms of something entering the bloodstream, like poison entering the bloodstream. So even though people may not understand, and Prabhupada's had us distribute other books too that perhaps were not so politically correct, like The Nectar of Instruction, you know, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Kuroda Vegam, Jivu Vegam, Uthur Pashta Vegam. You have to control your tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words, you know, to make disciples, of course. And, you know, and Prabhupada wanted us to distribute these in mass quantities. But because it's Krishna Katha, it's coming from Krishna, has the potency, that basically, even if they don't understand it, the medicine will work. Just like if you get a vaccination, of course, for some people they're anti-vaxxers. But if you get a vaccination, it doesn't matter whether you understand what they're vaccinating you with. Of course, we are not conspiracy theorists who are thinking that what Bill Gates is putting in little transmitters. People are so much into conspiracy. I was listening to a memory yesterday. One of my godbrothers said that when he was young, they captured him, the military captured him, put transmitters in his teeth so that he could they could control him. And then when he joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, he had to have all of his teeth taken out so he wasn't controlled by the military anymore. So anyway, apart from that, we're not conspiracy theorists, you know. So we believe in science to a certain extent. Prabhupada liked Western medicine, actually, when dealing with certain diseases. Of course, Prabhupada didn't want to pass away in the hospital, you know, with all the tubes and everything attached to his body. And you know, Prabhupada didn't like that very much. So let's say you're getting a vaccination. It doesn't really matter. You don't really have to understand all the things that are going on in the vaccination for it to work. I mean, when I was young, I was vaccinated against polio, was vaccinated against tuberculosis, diphtheria, you know, DPT, tetanus, and it worked. You know, I'm here today. But I didn't know what they were doing. I was just a little kid. So in the same way, when we distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, or people hear Krishna Katha, or people hear the holy name, it doesn't really matter in the beginning whether they understand or not. And they won't be able to understand as long as they're doing these sinful activities. But they will become purified. And there's many instances, even Jagai and Madai were the most sinful of sinners. And they happened to be drinking liquor and doing all their carousing outside of where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was conducting his kirtans. And so they heard the kirtan, and they began to imitate the kirtan in their drunken state. And by imitating the kirtan in their drunken state, they became purified. Of course, ultimately, they had to get Lord Nityananda's mercy. But still, they became purified just by hearing. Or even, like Prabhupada said, a Muslim who was chanting Haram, which means how horrible, being attacked by a wild boar, the Muslim is getting purified. That's even Namabas chanting. What to speak of hearing, like Prabhupada talks about here in the purport, hearing from a realized soul, you know, a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It will act, ultimately. And that's why Prabhupada said the poison has already entered into the bloodstream. In other words, the books are already out there. And then people will become devotees. So, anyway, that's the point I wanted to make about this particular verse. So let's talk about the Supreme Lord's appearance, or the events preceding the Supreme Lord's appearance. Because as we know, at the beginning of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam discusses how the earth was overburdened with demoniac kings, demoniac leaders, of course. It's also happening now in certain countries that should remain nameless. Anyway, the earth was overburdened. So we have to ask the question, why was the earth overburdened with demoniac kings? Of course, Bhagavatam later on says in Kali Yuga, in addition to the kings or presidents, or prime ministers who are demoniac, many demons are born in Brahmin families. That doesn't mean that everybody born in the Brahmin family is a demon. Just like in the previous yuga, the Dwapara Yuga, doesn't mean that everybody born in a king's family or royal family was a demon. But many were. And so we want to understand, why is it that there were so many demoniac kings on the earth planet before Krishna appeared? And of course, you know, the whole story of Bhumi, the goddess of earth, going to Lord Brahma, making a complaint. There's too many kings on my surface. Brahma goes with the demigods. Then they go to the shore of the ocean of milk, and they recite these prayers, the Purusha Shukta prayers, and get direction from the Supreme Lord to take birth on the earth planet. So let's hear why the kings were so demoniac at that time. And this is a story from the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, because the actual 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describes the events that preceded the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So here's the story. Once upon a time, there was Durvasa Muni. And everybody knows Durvasa Muni. He has a bad temper. He gets angry quite easily. And so in this particular case, he was justified in his anger because he gave Indra his garland. He gave him his garland like that. And Indra, instead of like saying, wow, thank you very much for the garland, he took the garland and he gave it to his elephant, Airavata. And Airavata just like trampled on the garland. So if you do that with Durvasa's garland, you're going to be in trouble. So Durvasa cursed the demigods, and they lost everything due to the offenses against this great personality, Durvasa Muni. And so that means the demons became very successful, took over the heavenly planets. And you're going to hear about how this goes back and forth. Sometimes the demons take over the heavenly planets. Sometimes the demigods take over the heavenly planets. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So it's an interesting story. So Indra and the demigods get really upset. You know, we lost our home. It would be like, for example, here we are worshiping Radha Golokananda here, and some demons, some bikers or something like that, come and take over the temple. It's the same, you know, it's the same scenario, basically. Because the demigods, they do worship Vishnu, and Vishnu appears to the demigods from time to time. And so it's like their temple, you know, the heavenly planets. So they're very upset, and they and Lord Shiva go to Brahma, Brahma's on Mount Sumeru, and they ask Lord Brahma what they should they do. Then again, you know, when in trouble, go to the Lord in Svetasvip. That means the white island. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead said to the demigods headed up by Lord Brahma, now's the time to make a truce. You know, if you can't beat them, join them. And what you should do is make a truce with the demons and say that we have a really good deal for you. That if we work together, we're all going to get Amrit. That means the nectar of immortality. Or you'll live a long time by drinking this. And so they thought it was a real good idea. And Lord Vishnu suggested you should use Mount Mandara as a churning rod. And use this snake named Vasuki as sort of like the rope to do that. So they went to Bali Maharaj, who was the king of the demons at that particular time. They made the agreement. And they went to get Mount Mandara, and it was just too heavy, and it crushed all of them. So that wasn't the end of the story. What happened is, in that case, call for Vishnu again. And so Vishnu came and picked up the mountain and revived all the demigods and the demons. And he carried the mountain along with Garuda to where it was supposed to be brought, to the ocean. And Garuda left at that point because Vasuki doesn't like Garuda around. Because Vasuki is prasad for Garuda, or food for Garuda. So he doesn't like Garuda around. So Garuda left, and there was a discussion by the demigods and the demons who would have the head and who would have the tail of Vasuki. And so naturally, in most living entities, you would consider the head to be more auspicious than the feet or the tail, right? I mean, that's the natural inclination. But in this particular case, the demons, they just kept insisting, we want the head. The demigods wanted, demigods actually wanted the head in the beginning. And the demons were insisting, we want the head. So there was some fight. Eventually, the demigods said, all right, you can have the head of Vasuki to the demons. And the demons did not understand that the head of Vasuki had bad breath. I mean, poisonous breath. You know, snakes have bad breath, so to speak. So anyway, so eventually, and the demigods caught hold of the tail. So then they started to churn, but as they started to churn the ocean, the mountain started to sink because there was nothing to hold the mountain up. Mount Mandara started to sink, and then Krishna had to appear as the tortoise incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's Kurmadev. And it's described that the tortoise incarnation of the Lord was 800,000 miles in width. That's a big tortoise. So we could hold the mountain. And so then the demigods and the demons started to churn and all with all enthusiasm. And also on top of the hill, there was Lord Vishnu with 1,000 arms holding the hill, you know, because you had to have a pivot on the top so the hill wouldn't just tip over. So Lord Vishnu was holding on 1,000 arms. And demigods and demons, they started to churn. And it's described the demigods got their enthusiasm from the mode of goodness, and the demons got their enthusiasm from the mode of ignorance. And Vasuki, even though Vasuki's a good one, he sort of like made them more ignorant just by that description in the Bhagavatam. So they were churning, and all of a sudden there was this poison that was produced, Halahala poison. It was threatening to inundate the whole universe and kill everybody in the whole universe, and Lord Shiva, he just decided to drink it up. And he had a blue throat from that. Other things were produced. The Surabhi cow, which was given to the Brahmanas. Uchaya Shrava, the horse who was given to Bali. Aravata, the elephant that was given to Indra. And along with 8 other elephants, the Kastubamani that was given to Vishnu. Apsaras, who were given to the demigods. Rama, that's Lakshmi. She was looking for her husband. She came out of this churning business, and she was thinking, where's my husband? Then she came to Lord Vishnu and garlanded him. Varuni beverage came out, and this was given to the demons because this indicates the demons like to get intoxicated. Of course, it's not that Balaram is a demon because he took Varuni beverage. In the spiritual world or in Goloka, and Goloka and Gokul, there is intoxication, but this is the original form of blissful intoxication instead of ignorant intoxication that exists in this material world. Everything that's here in this world also exists in the spiritual world in its original, pure, pristine state. We should try to understand. Nothing could be here unless the original form of that exists in the spiritual world. Of course, That sounds rather Platonic, you know, from Plato. You understand? And Plato talked about, just a little philosophy for you. Plato talked about the world of forms. In other words, here in this material world, we can have a square, but we can never have a perfect square, right? No such thing as a perfect square, because it's always going to be off. So Plato had this whole idea based on mathematics, because mathematically you can have a perfect square, that there is actually a world of forms out there from which this material world is a reflection. Anyway, so that world, original world, is the spiritual world, and everything here is a reflection. So there's love in this world, but that love is actually perverted. It's not perfect. But in the spiritual realm, it is perfect. So anyway, getting back to the point, so the Varuni beverage, Dhanvantari came out, the doctor incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he came out with the nectar. Immediately, the demon stole it. Even though the deal was to divide it up equally, the demons actually stole this nectar just for themselves. Of course, being demons, they actually started a quarrel with each other over who had the right to the nectar, who would take it first. So there was quarreling back and forth between all the demons. Krishna actually created that quarreling in their hearts so they would fight over the nectar. And the demigods were bereft. They approached Vishnu again, and Vishnu appeared as the, what, Mohini Murti incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, bewildered the demons. And the demons agreed to allow her to divide the nectar up fairly. Okay. So she divided up fairly by giving it all to the demigods. And, of course, Rahu and Ketu snuck in, and she ended up cutting their heads off. And then, after that, the demons got really upset. We've been cheated, and they started a fight with the demigods again. Demons like Bali, Kalanemi, who later on became Kamsa, Vipachiti. I call them all the all-star demons. You know, just like in baseball, you have all-star teams. Bali was using tricks. Demons were winning, even after the demigods ate all that nectar. Then Vishnu appeared to save them again. You see, each and every time the demigods have problems, Vishnu comes. They actually ask for Vishnu. And when they don't have problems, generally they don't go to Vishnu. Isn't it? When everything's going all right. Therefore, Krishna says, Yashaham Adagrinami Hurisheta Dhanamshanai. For those who I especially favor, and don't get frightened by this, to those who I especially favor, I take away everything. Their friends and relatives reject them, and all they're left with is me. So Krishna does that. That's Krishna's special favor. Because in this world, we're so attached to, you know, everything that's connected with the skin. Skin diseases, Prabhupada would say it. And so it's nice when Krishna takes everything away. Maybe some of you think it's not nice, but it's nice. So with the demigods, the point is Krishna keeps taking things away, putting them in difficulty. Because without the demons, the demigods would practically never think of Krishna, except for the demigods that are pure devotees. They would just be having a good old time up there in the heavenly planets, waste their human form or demigod form of life. So anyway, so what happens is Vishnu appears because the demigods say, we need your help again. 911, you know, call for Vishnu. Vishnu kills Kalanemi, and that was Kamsa, remember? So he's been killed by Vishnu, so that's why he's really upset and kills all the children of Vasudeva and Devaki. And anyway, and he knows Vishnu's going to kill him. Vishnu kills Kalanemi with Kalanemi's trident. Using the same trident that Kalanemi was trying to fight with him. And then Vishnu kills Mali, Sumali, Malyavan. These names may be familiar to you because they're also in the Ramayana. Whoops. Oh, my God. Hope we have time. Bali is knocked unconscious. I'm going to go real quickly now because we have a few more minutes. Narada goes to inform the demons what has happened. You know, Narada's thinking, you know, I want to stir up a bigger fight here, have some more fun, see Vishnu in action more. He's like that. So the demons attack in force. Indra is surrounded. And especially there's this one demon he can't figure out how to kill. His name is Namuchi. And this Namuchi has gotten a benediction from the demigods. He couldn't be killed by any weapon or anything except for foam. Which is interesting. Muchi, foam, soap, you know. Anyway, so Indra doesn't know. He's dealing with Namuchi. Not Mamuchi, Namuchi. He's dealing with Namuchi. He doesn't understand. Then he hears a voice that this particular demon cannot be killed by anything dry or anything wet. What a benediction. Sounds like the virus. And so Indra gets a foam weapon. Then all the demons die at that point. And Brahma sends Narada. This is going back and forth. Such an interesting story. To tell Indra, don't kill any more demons. We need them. You know, because he wants to make a balance in the force. You know, those of you who've seen Star Wars. So it's important because devotees without opposition will turn to the dark side. Not pure devotees. But if there's no opposition, there's no impetus. And then you get in the mode of ignorance. There is a large boga offering. The plate needs to stay longer. Oh, the greetings. Okay, we'll be at 7:40. Thank you. Okay, give me a few more minutes. Thank you. Okay, So Narada tells the Indra, stop killing the demons, because Narada is Brahma's messenger. So in the meantime, Bali gets cured by Shukracharya, because Shukracharya has this Mrityu Sanjeevani mantra. He can bring everyone back to life. Bali says, because you brought me back to life, you're my guru. So he accepts Shukracharya as his guru, and he attacks Indra again, and he takes over heaven. You know, this time he becomes successful. You know, it's never-ending saga between the demons and the devotees, or demons and demigods. You know, back and forth, back and forth. I mean, you have this in the Ramayana, too, with Ravana. Then, and demons become so powerful that Brihaspati tells Indra, there's nothing you can do. Just go hide. So Indra starts hiding at this particular point. And Bali, he gets really powerful. He does 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices to remain as the king of heaven. And so Indra's mother, you know, when in trouble, call for your mother. So Aditi is the mother of all the demigods. She's really upset. She thinks, you know, I want my children to get back there in the heavenly planets. And so then she goes to her husband. And Kashyapa is very much amenable to doing something about it. It's not like when Diti approaches Kashyapa. Diti approaches Kashyapa, she has to sort of like soften his heart, trick him with womanly wiles, right? Just so that Kashyapa will do something. Just like we were telling the story the other night of how Diti, she was really upset with Indra, and she wanted to have a son who would kill or be the enemy of Indra. So she knew that her husband Kashyapa wouldn't agree to it. So she began to feed him nicely, speak with sweet words, and, you know, all this other. And he says, oh, I'm so pleased with you. Just whatever you want, my dear Diti. And she says, I want a son who's the enemy of Indra. And Kashyapa thought, got tricked again. You know, poor Kashyapa, he gets tricked so many times. By Diti, you know, one time Diti was lusty and therefore, you know, had Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha being born. So Kashyapa thinks, let me give her the benediction in a tricky way. Okay, here's this Payavrata. If you do this properly, you'll have a son who can kill, be the enemy of Indra. And if you don't do it properly, you'll have a son who's the friend of Indra. So Diti was doing this Payavrata. And as she was doing the Payavrata, Indra was hanging around serving her. Because he wanted to make sure, or just observe her, to see if she made a mistake. So she's doing the Payavrata, and towards the end of the Payavrata, she actually slept at the wrong time. Indra, he tried to do an abortion. He entered within her womb, and with his thunderbolt, he cut the embryo open to 7 pieces. And those 7 pieces started to cry. Don't ask me how they were crying in the womb. But they were starting to cry. And he thought, oh my God, now I got 7 enemies. And so he took his thunderbolt again and cut each one of them into 7 pieces. And then he had 49 enemies, he thought. But then they were all born. You know, I guess it was time for the delivery. And this is the Bhagavatam. Don't blame me for this. They were all delivered simultaneously with Indra. So they were, all the kids were there with Indra. And they were all Indra's friends. Anyway. So Kashyapa didn't have to be convinced by Aditi to do something about the situation. So first, of course, he preaches to her to be detached, and then he said, worship Vishnu, and also he told her to do the Prayavrata for 12 days, only drink milk and chant certain mantras. And on the 13th day, they did an Abhishek, and Krishna appears and agrees to be the son of Aditi. And, of course, that son's name was Lord Vamana Dev. He appears, and then he goes into the womb of Aditi and is born like that. And then he goes to Bali's sacrifice. And Bali is doing this Ashwamedha sacrifice, the 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. And we know the story. He goes to Bali's sacrifice, and Bali is trained up really well to worship and respect Brahmanas. So He respects Vamanadeva, bathes his feet, and says to him, "What do you want? I'll give you anything." Of course, this is the proper procedure when someone comes, a Brahmin comes to your house, to give them whatever they ask for. Because I don't advise it nowadays, and most Brahmins are not actually qualified Brahmins. They may ask for something that's not appropriate. So, anyway, so Vamanadeva asks for 3 steps of land, and he sort of gets chastised by Bali Maharaj, who says, "You know, I can give you everything. This is a foolish request. You know, I can give you a wife, a kingdom, a planet, anything you want." And then Vamana says, "You know, if one is not satisfied with 3 steps of land, one will not be satisfied with anything." And of course, we have that verse in the Bhagavad Gita. What is it? Avritam Gyanametena Gyanino Nichabhairina. Kamarupena Kontiya Dushparena Lenacha. One is never satisfied. The senses are hankering for so much enjoyment. The more you give them the enjoyment, it's like putting gasoline into the fire. They become further inflamed. The only way to pacify them is, of course, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. Sarvaloka Maheshram Suridam Sarvabhuktanam Yatvamam Shantim Richati. To understand that Krishna is the one that you're supposed to give enjoyment to, not your senses. That's a whole switch in one's mentality. Anyway, so we know that actually Vaman accepts the 3 steps, and he actually covers the world, the sky. There's no place to put this 3rd step, and Bali Maharaj says, "Put it on my head." And in this case, you had Vindhya Mali, who is the wife of Bali Maharaj. She saves Bali Maharaj. It's interesting. Praise to Vishnu, save my husband, and Prahlad Maharaj appears, and Bali Maharaj goes to Sutala. Wow. So then, but Diti is really upset about this whole thing. I mean, actually, after this point is when Diti does the Payovrata and tries to have a son who can kill Indra. But anyway, we switch the time frame on this. So then the demigods regain the heavenly planets. They're very happy. And the demons are thinking, what can we do now? And they take birth on the earth planet. And taking birth on the earth planet, they appear as kings. And this is what happens before the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then we go on to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We told the story about Brahma and the demigods approaching Lord Vishnu. And then we start, after we have the story of Brahma and the demigods approaching Lord Vishnu, we have Kamsa driving Vasudeva and Devaki from the marriage. And they hear a voice. Kamsa hears a voice, and it says, "You know, the 8th son of Devaki and Vasudeva is going to kill you." And Kamsa gets down from the chariot, grabs Devaki, gets ready to kill her, so that she's not able to have any kids. Vasudeva actually intercedes, and he promises to deliver each and every kid to Kamsa, and then. What happens, let's see, just a little bit about here. Vasudeva says that Kamsa believes him, and after they have their first child, Vasudeva takes the first child to Kamsa. Kamsa sends the child back because he knows it's going to be the 8th child rather than the first child. But then Narada Muni appears to stir things up again. And Narada Muni says, "Look, Kamsa, you don't know how these guys are counting. They may be counting like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, but they may be also counting 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So this may be the 8th child. So you never know. So you should kill every child." So why does Narada do this? Well, to speed up the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And why does Narada get into this infanticide business? You know, he's encouraged because these 6 kids that were killed by Kamsa, here's the story, they were originally sons of Marichi, They laughed at Lord Brahma when he was chasing Vak, his daughter. And, of course, Lord Brahma's chasing his daughter was not the appropriate thing, but to laugh at a Vaishnava or to criticize a Vaishnava for some accidental deviation is actually a great offense. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about that, and also Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about that. And so they get cursed. Then there also appear as the six sons of Hiranyakashipu. Then the six sons of Kalanemi, they have all these different births. And these sons of Kalanemi worship Lord Brahma, and Hiranyakashipu feels disempowered. Why are you worshiping Lord Brahma? You should worship me. So he curses these six kids. This is the whole history of the six kids who were killed, to be killed by their father. And previously, Kalanemi had six sons, and they were the six sons of Kalanemi anyway, and they were known as the Sadgarbhas. So this is a whole story like that. So this is why they were actually, I'm not going to go through the whole story of the Harivamsa and the other literatures, but this is why the six kids have to be killed. Now, later on, those six children were brought before Devaki by Krishna's grace and then fed the breast milk from Devaki. And because that breast milk from Devaki was the prasadam remnants of Krishna, they became purified and great devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So after all that, they actually became great devotees. And as far as Kamsa, the birth of Kamsa, Kamsa was the son of, not a devotee, a demon named Drumila. Drumila is also a devotee name. We have one of our friends is named Drumila. And so he's a very nice Sankirtan devotee. And Padmavati was Ugrasena's wife. So why did she have a relationship with Drumila? The reason she had a relationship with Drumila is that Drumila was lusting after her, and he actually took the form of Ugrasena. And as a result of that, Kamsa was born. And also, Padmavati was a little touched in her head. I mean, she was a little eccentric. That story is told in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So, anyway, so I think that's all we have time for. Any questions or comments? Yes. Who? Airavata, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, also Lakshmi was there previously, too. I thought about that, too. But Lakshmi was also there previously. And she was taken by Vishnu. So these are pastimes. Some of them are mixed from different yugas or different kalpas like that. And it's an interesting question. Yes, Mother Ramila.
This relates to some other project
I'm working on. Do you know where specifically in that pastime with Bali it says that the demons, once they were sent to Sutula, decided to take birth on her? Let me let you know later. I don't know which verse and purport it's there. It's one of the Acharya's commentaries.
Also, it's not in
Prabhupada's book. No. It's in the Acharya's commentaries that they took birth on the earth because they were escaping. Actually, Vrinda Nandamarj tells it in a very funny way. He says, just like in Star Wars, sorry about that, he talks about the Death Star. Death Star? You know what that is. And he said that, this is his words, don't blame me, just write to him if you have a problem with this. He said they want to convert the earth into a Death Star. And see, the demons sometimes go hiding. Another example when the demons were hiding from the demigods is when they went in the ocean. Remember that story? They were actually hiding in the ocean. The demigods couldn't get to them. Why couldn't the demigods get to them? Because Agni, who was like really the powerful guy in the demigods, he couldn't go into water. It's a real problem, you know. So they thought, you know, the underwater demons. And so they called for Agastya Muni. And they said, can you please do us a favor? Drink up the ocean? I mean, these are amazing stories. And he drank the whole ocean up. And then they attacked the demons. And then after that, they said to Augusta, what did they say? Okay, you can let the ocean back. And he burped. And he said, sorry, boys, I digested the ocean. He had very good digestion. So then later on the ocean bed got filled when the Ganges came down. So that's why we say that the ocean is actually a place of pilgrimage, and people put the ashes of their departed family members into the ocean, because it was filled by the Ganges, and the ocean was dug out. You know, all the pits, like the, what's the name of that, the deepest part of the ocean? What, Mariana Trench? So that was dug out by the sons of Sagara when they were actually looking for the horse that was stolen by Indra that was kept in Kapila Dev's ashram. I mean, it's a whole interesting story there. So. Yeah.
So, you know, if something seems to come afterwards, it doesn't mean it'd be like you were saying, you know, yoga, but it doesn't report to say we're doing this or one, you know, then this happened in 14.
Right. Yeah, it's not chronological. It's dealing with, you know, Siddhanta, Bhava, like that. Siddhanta, the perfect conclusion, spiritual emotions. These are important things. We're not interested in mundane history. Thank you very much. All glory.